There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave counsel. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along for this hour of live local talk. And also a couple quick reminders before we talk to my friend, Ben Raines. Number one, the app. A lot of people in the last few weeks have been downloading it. Be like them. It's for free, and it's waiting for, and it's awesome, I think. And I would like you to download it. If you want to kind of give it a review, send me an email or a text about that. But you just go, if you're an iPhone user, which we'll talk about iPhones here with Ben Raines in a second. If you're an iPhone user, go to the App Store. If you're an Android user, go to Google Play, and just look for FM TALK 1065. All right? Search that. You'll see the logo for the station. Download the app. Of course, streaming the station on there. You've got the latest traffic maps on there. You have the latest weather information, show schedules. You have our social media feeds with all the news coming through right there. And also, you've got the ability to text us from there, call us from there, send us a talkback message. It records a message we can play back here on the air. And also, it's the first place our podcast posts to. 56 hours a week of live local programs come out of our studios here at Airport and 65. You can get those podcasts first when they post to the FM Talk 106.5 app. So get that. And while we're on the notes here, votenappies.com. We sure appreciate your vote in the nappies in the radio section for media. Check it out, votenappies.com. And without further ado, a man who is got an iPhone sitting in a bag of rice right now trying to dry out. Ladies and gentlemen, author, reporter, outdoorsman, bon vivant, and friend of mine, Ben Raines. Hey, man.
Hey, Sean. How you doing?
I'm doing good. So people can check out, if people are looking at your Facebook page right now, they'll see you going to try to, I think this has happened to enough people. This is what they call in the business a relatable. You dropped a phone in the Delta.
Yes, I did. And not just in the Delta, but into one of those giant floating masses of vegetation. it was one of those moments of pure idiocy. I was actually showing some people how to take better pictures with their cell phone by getting your phone real close to the subject, you know, because an iPhone has a wide-angle lens. So for a flower, you want to be right up there on it. And I'm reaching over the side in the water, and I just dropped my phone.
But you went in after it.
I did. It was the first time on one of my charters where my customers have seen me in my underwear. And I just said, look, I'm chugging down to my knickers and going in. So if you don't want to see it, look the other way. But they were very helpful. And I fished around. The bottom was really soupy. You know, it was up at the very top of Mudhole Creek, which I can tell you is a very apt name.
Yes.
So the bottom was so soupy, it wouldn't support my weight. When I tried to stand on it, I just started going down. So I actually held myself up on the mats of floating vegetation and then just kind of swam my feet around the bottom. I pulled up so many pieces of wood that felt like an iPhone. And the whole time, this woman on the boat named Tracy Holiday kept saying, I think it's over here under the boat. You know how phones are flat? I think it may have surfed over this way after you dropped it. And I for 10 minutes, I was just thinking, well, maybe. But so finally, I went over there. I was like, okay, Tracy, I'm coming. So I went over to where she was talking about. I found it within seconds.
So should have listened
truth,
to your,
you know, you should have listened really to her. Smart.
Exactly. You should have listened. You should have listened, yeah. Ben. Don't be
great at finding things always. And yes, a series of life lessons I did not employ that I would have been in the water a lot less long.
That's for sure. Talk about the fact, too, you are on the road right now for a book delivery. Talk about that.
Yeah. This is very exciting. I did a GoFundMe for the last slave ship to raise enough money to donate copies of the book to the entire student body and all the faculty of the Mobile County Training School, which is the school originally started by the Africans, the Clotilda captives, back in the 1880s. And it's still teaching kids today.
That's full circle. What a full circle event that is.
And you know, this is their story. I mean, these kids, some of them are descendants, but it's their neighbors, their family. So I really wanted them to have the story in the community. You know, you give a book to every kid, you're giving a book to every family of those kids in that school. And so that, I feel like I really wanted to be able to do it. So I thank everybody who helped with the GoFundMe. What's so cool about that school is, first, you know, the Africans built it themselves and started it because, as Cujo says in Barracoon, the white folks wouldn't give us one, so we built one for ourselves. Then it burned down over and over, and they kept rebuilding it until finally it burned down in the early 1900s. And they applied for a grant from this thing called the Rosenwald Foundation. And that was started by the man who was the CEO of Sears at the time, who was one of the richest men in the world, and Booker T. Washington. And together they built 5,000 schools for African-American kids in the South in the Reconstruction era and up into the 1900s. And so they got a grant to do that here and expanded the school from one teacher to 10 teachers, and they built dorms for them and everything. Now get this. This is the only one of the 5,000 schools started with that money from the Sears CEO that is still teaching kids today.
Holy cow. One out of 5,000.
Yeah.
This is these stories, you know, it's all connecting. We talk about the full circle of this, and I want to get into what's been going on lately with the Clotilda. But first, on the book, reviews, obviously, you and I talked about it early on, but, you know, I mean, you've branched out a little bit beyond Midday Mobile, and I don't know how to take that, but reviews, I mean, from the New York Times to national publications everywhere, discussion on your book. So what has that done for book sales? That has to be, I mean, help a whole bunch.
First, let me just say, you're still my favorite, Sean.
Thank you. Thank you. Good deal, homeboy. I appreciate that. I appreciate that. But you did talk to others.
Selling really well. It's selling all over the country. In fact, I'm leaving for California at the crack of dawn tomorrow morning to go speak out there. And it's been really exciting seeing the book take off and reach so many people. I spoke a bunch in Mobile in the last few weeks, and it was just so gratifying to hear how much people are learning from the book and how it's connecting them to, you know, this history all around us that most of them never knew about. You know, as a journalist or an author, that's what you want. You want to do something that affects people or helps people, you know? And it's been so gratifying from that perspective.
Any kind of book measuring contest between you and Dad?
He's got a new book that's going to come out next year, so maybe we'll do it then. But here's my book measuring thing that was fun. I spoke at Page and Powell the other night, and they told me that I am the only person they've had Alabama author who has beaten Winston Groom in book sales.
Well done.
So that's pretty good company.
Yeah, that's really good company. And Hal, I'm not starting problems. I want to get you on the show too. So, a couple things here this story is getting out. It's getting discussed, and then you've had interest. Actually, I've been obviously you and I have been talking about this since the word go. Interest from other sources beyond us here. So, first of all, remind folks who owns the Clotilda. What entity owns the Clotilda?
The state of Alabama owns the Clotilda.
Okay.
And, you know, when that under state law, the state typically owns anything that is older than 50 years that's in the water. And that was a law enacted, I think, in the Bob Riley administration to prevent Civil War relic hunters from going and stealing stuff out of rivers, particularly up around the Selma Armory site in Selma. Scuba divers were going in and coming, they've been doing this for decades, coming away with rifles, muskets, swords, all kind of stuff. And so they had this law enacted. Now, when the state still had to get ownership in admiralty court, and so I was actually invited by the federal court to participate and try and get ownership. And I elected not to because I didn't feel like I should be the guy fighting to own the Clotilda. And I really regret that now. I wish I'd teamed up with the descendants and some of the groups in Africatown and tried to get ownership of it so that we could make sure it gets dug up and put in a museum.
And that's what I want to talk about, because you know, you had the researchers in this earlier this month, beginning of the month. We were talking about that. We're here assessing the Clotilda. What did they come away with, any opinion here? And then I want to talk about your opinion of leave in place versus raise, or, you know, I don't know what the right term is, aquatically excavate, or
right.
Yeah.
So a number of things happened during their visit. And the most exciting thing from my perspective is they pulled up a piece from the bottom of the ship. They cut a little piece out. And when they cut it on the boat deck, they could smell sap. And that tells you the wood down there in the mud is perfect. It is intact and solid. You know, the underwater forest wood that was buried was like that. When we cut it, sap actually oozed out of pieces of the wood that had been buried.
When I read that, I thought about exactly that. When I read that, I was actually, my son was with me, and I said, listen, Mr. Ben found these cypress stumps, and not only did they have sap, they smelled like cypress when they cut them. So it is preserved. It's in a, it's
right.
Okay.
So great news there. Something, you know, when they came to the Mobile County Training School before the dig, they came last week. I think they spoke Monday. And during that meeting, they said they were going to dig out the hole. And any artifacts they found, they were going to preserve them. And they were talking about vacuum dredging out the whole hole. And I objected to this during the meeting, during the question time, on the grounds that they were going to lose the most powerful evidence in the ship, which is the possibility of getting DNA from the hole. So from the very earliest stages, Jim Delgado, the lead archaeologist, had talked to me about the idea that there might be DNA preserved in the cracks in between the planks in the bottom of the ship where the people were. You know, they were in there for 6 weeks. So blood, feces, hair, all these things could be trapped in the cracks. Well, the thing I raised at the meeting was if they dredge out the hold, that chance is gone because they were going to be doing it underwater blind during a flood. You know, the river was up and muddy. The current was running fast when they were starting. And I said, you have collected DNA from dozens of people in Africatown to do this. Your original plan, you said the best way to dig it up was to do a cofferdam around it. You know, a cofferdam is where you build a wall in the water from the riverbed up above the surface of the river. And then you suck the water out from this circle you've made. And then you can work on the ship dry, you know, in dry conditions, like doing archaeology on land. So in the meeting, you know, I said, I don't understand why y'all are going to ruin the chance to get DNA before we've looked any further. And he said, well, you know, that's one way to look at a ship. And I said, well, you said it was the best way. And he was like, well, I said a lot of ways. I said, Jim, I got you on tape, you know, old reporter, right? You tape everything.
Right.
So he sort of hemmed and hawed, and he said, well, we can't do a cofferdam because we don't even know if the river sediments will support a cofferdam. Well, that's absurd. Here we are 4 years after I found the ship, and they haven't done the basic engineering work at the site to know what the sediments are like. You know, I know we had COVID and all, but that's really not a very impressive showing from the Historical Commission that 4 years out, we still don't know that. Now, you know, and so I said, why are you going to destroy the chance to get DNA before you even know if you can use a cofferdam? So during the dig, they did not suck out the whole hole.
Good.
They did a very small area, about a foot, I'm told, foot square down, and left the rest of the hold intact, which is great. So I think they changed course. If so, well done. I'm really glad they did that. That's great, because then we still have a chance to get the DNA evidence. But this idea that the site might not support a cofferdam is just ridiculous. It's hard-packed sand in that area, and there is a gigantic cofferdam just a few miles away surrounding the battleship. I don't know if you remember it, but after one of the hurricanes, they built a cofferdam around the battleship. And if that spot can hold up a cement permanent cofferdam, there's no way the Clotilda site can't hold a cofferdam up. So it's just more misdirection and and misleading. We can dig that ship up, and it's going to be really cool.
We're going to run up against the news break here. Coming right back, more with Ben Raines. Talk about the process here with the Clotilda. Also, the last slave ship. The folks far and wide in our country reading this. So when we have those people interested in our story, how do we bring those people to Africatown? How do we maximize the impact on our country? We'll talk about that, too, when we get back.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, welcome back. Midday Mobile, our conversation with Ben Raines and The Last Slave Ship. That's the book, and I want to talk to Ben about that, too. The audiobook question, I think I had this last time you were on. Somebody asked me, and you were off before I could get it asked. So, Ben, is there an audiobook if somebody spends more time commuting than they do sitting down quietly reading?
Yes, there is an audiobook, and it's narrated by a guy named Kevin Free, who is an award-winning book reader, but he's also an actor who's been in a Marvel TV series and stuff, and he just does a killer job. It's really awesome, and everybody who has listened to it that has talked to me about it just loved it. So that was it's great.
Okay, so just look for The Last Slave Ship wherever people are going to get that, and do they go to get the audio?
If you look at Amazon, they're selling the audiobook there. You can get it. It's easy to get.
Also, I think digital. It's on Kindle as well, or one of the.
It's on Kindle too. Yeah, okay. Absolutely. You can get it any way you want.
Although we would love you to pick up a copy here in Mobile too, if possible. Or
the bookstore has signed copies downtown Mobile, and Page and Palette has signed copies over there in Fairhope.
Good stuff. Buy it locally if possible. That's for sure. I want to, before we go to the news here, and we'll come back and talk more about this. So we're talking about this subject, cofferdam versus not cofferdam. But the overall question is, can the remains of the Clotilda be excavated, be brought onto land, and make it worth it? Or will they fall apart? I mean,
there's no question they can be excavated. You know, one of the things they said in the meeting was, well, you probably don't want it if it's in pieces. Oh, bull crap. Put the pieces back together. You know, the Cairo, the Confederate blockade runner, or I'm sorry, the Confederate ironclad that's on display there, it broke in half when they pulled it up. And people have been looking at that thing for 40 years, and they put it back together. You know, so the Clotilda can come up. And when you think of what the Clotilda is, that's why we need to go the extra mile to bring it up. You know, these ironclads, and Alabama's looking and bringing two of them up that are sunk in the Mobile River. They're just Confederate warships, right? The Clotilda is so much more. It is the last slave ship. You know, we've all heard that, but it's something else. The Clotilda and the people on it, they are the origin story for the African diaspora, not just in America, globally. Because we don't know the story of the 12 million people who were captured. We don't know what their lives were like before they were captured. We don't know what happened to them during the Middle Passage. We don't know what happened to them when they were enslaved, because nobody was writing down those stories. So the Clotilda happened so late, 1860.
We have those. I want you to pick that up. I got the hard break coming up. We're coming right back. More with Ben Raines right here on Midday Mobile.
Listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, welcome back. Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5. And continuing our conversation with Ben Raines. And so much to talk about. We can't fit it in 1 hour, and we'll do more with him in the future like we have, because I haven't even got, I mean, I want to talk underwater forest, America's Amazon, of course, we're talking now, of course, about the finding of the wreck of the Clotilda and the book, The Last Slave Ship. I want to ask this before we get back into what you're saying about the diaspora and the importance of what was this last slave ship in, but this is a question you've talked about before, but we had a caller call in, say, how can you be sure, Ben Raines, that that is the Clotilda?
Yeah, well, and luckily I don't have to be sure. There was a giant archaeological team made up of international experts that determined it. But we have all the information about the Clotilda, how it was built, what its dimensions were, what kind of wood, because all that information was preserved by the federal government. So the U.S. government in the mid-1800s was really ramping up the bureaucracy that we know today, you know.
Yeah.
And so they were recording all this information about the ship because that was how you got your taxes. That's in the port. That's how you collected taxes on the cargo coming in, was knowing the volume the ship could hold and also being able to positively identify the ship so that you knew this was Clotilda based on these design features.
Like shipwright's notes? I mean, wasn't it like when you and I talked about this the first time? It's like the blueprint, or the shipwright wrote out that this beam is this beam is that. Okay.
And there's a whole federal, it's all in the federal archives. You know, they preserved all that stuff. So the Clotilda documents are all in Atlanta, and you can actually go see them. And so the archaeologists determined it matched perfectly in every way. And so that right there, that's how we know it's the Clotilda.
All right, but go ahead.
So I was going to say, so switching gears to why it's important and why, you know, back to what I was saying about the Clotilda being the origin story for the African diaspora. So 1808, the Atlantic slave trade was outlawed, right? So it was illegal to bring people in anymore from Africa. So by the time of the Clotilda in the beginning of the Civil War, 1860, there were very few people in America who had been born in Africa. Most of the enslaved people in America had been born in America. And so they didn't have that full perspective of the, you know, what it was like to be captured in Africa and all that. So with the Clotilda people, you know, the first interviews with them, 10 of them were interviewed by this Mobile woman, Emma Roach, in 1910. And she wrote a book. And so from their own mouths, from 10 of the captives, we know what their lives in Africa were like. Their families owned property. They were business people. One guy was a commercial fisherman. We know, you know, Cujo in Zora Neale Hurston's book talks extensively about running through the forests, you know, hunting for fruit by smelling for them on the breeze. So we know this idyllic life they had in Africa. Then we know the slaving raid from their own descriptions and the horrors of that. Then we know the time in the Barracoon, the slave prison. And then we know what happened to them on the Middle Passage and what happened to them when they were enslaved and what happened to them when they were freed and created Africatown. And then from the white side of the people who enslaved them, we have Captain Foster's journal describing the trip there, negotiating with the Dahomey Empire, the people he bought them from. And we have Timothy Mayer's repeated interviews about all aspects of the story. So this is the only story like this on Earth where we have the entire story from the mouths of the people who were involved. And so that's why it's so important. And now we have the ship. We have, you know, the vehicle that transported them into slavery. And so that is what the Clotilda is. And by building a museum with the ship in it, we can tell that whole story, and nobody else in the world can tell that story. So we see it. I'm working with people in Africatown. We want to build a giant museum, put the ship in it, and we want it to be the national monument to the enslaved. And, you know, like the Legacy Museum in Montgomery, that thing has been a tourism boom. You know, I read one statistic that in the first year it was open, the April over April hotel rooms, they booked 8,000 more hotel rooms after that museum was built in a month, per month. That has been $1 billion economic impact in Montgomery. So that's what would happen here. Now, Africatown is in Mobile. So put the museum in Africatown, help boost Africatown, but all that tax revenue is going straight to the city of Mobile. So Mayor Stimson is on board. He loves this plan. There are challenges ahead to make it happen, but there's a site in Africatown that's 42 acres. It used to be the Happy Hills Housing Project, which was land taken from Africatown residents in 1960 to build that housing project, which fell into disrepair and was actually torn down 2 years ago. So right now, there's a 42-acre vacant lot ready for a museum. We could build a replica of the town, like old Alabama Town in Montgomery, where we show their cabins and their gardens, which were all very famous. And we can rebuild the commercial district of Africatown. We can actually put restaurants and, you know, Africatown, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, there were restaurants, there were movie theaters, there were grocery stores, pharmacies. There's not a single business in Africatown today. And it's because of the Bay Bridge Road. It destroyed the community. You know, they built it in 92. and it went from a two-lane road to a six-lane road. Get this. They tore down all the cabins built by the founders, built by Cujo Lewis and the others, in 1992.
Yeah,
the descendants of those families were still living in the houses that the Africans built, and the city of Mobile and the state of Alabama tore them down. So, you know, what happened to Africatown and what we all know of it today wasn't by accident. It was on purpose. And so here's a chance to kind of fix that and restore this neat little community, which would be fantastic.
It would. The facility that's in, they brought in the modular home or the facility there, that's not on the, is that on the 42-acre track or is that separate?
That is not, that is a totally separate spot.
Okay.
That's a little metal building built by the county. The county paid for that, and it is right next to the community center in Africatown. So it's the 42-acre site is actually over across Bay Bridge Road. So it's you know, a mile or so away from there. That little museum, it's great as a starting point, but it's not big enough for this history.
Right.
I mean, this is a globally important artifact, the ship and the story. And so right now, you know, France colonized Benin, the country everybody on the Clotilda came from, in 1892. They conquered it and made it a colony. They stole all the art. They stole incredible, beautiful art from there, these sculptures and stuff. Just last year, they announced they're giving it all back, 25,000 pieces of art, and they're paying for the Smithsonian, our Smithsonian, to come help design two $25 million museums in Benin, one of the poorest countries on Earth, to celebrate the cultures that were lost to slavery and the Dahomey Empire, to tell that story over there. Now, how is it here in Africatown? All we've got is a little prefab metal building when we have this incredible story. You know, the Smithsonian, we need to come up with the money and have them come here and help Mobile and Africatown have a museum like that that will attract hundreds of thousands of people a year.
Yeah, and but it will stay here, right? I mean, I'm looking at texters saying,
yeah.
What protections are there to keep, you know, whichever thing happens here, whether it stays in place or it's excavated and moved on shore, to make this stay here and not go, you know, obviously if it excavated, would they take it somewhere else in Alabama? Is there any move there? Is it safe here?
I have, again, on tape, because I'm that kind of old reporter, I have the Lisa Jones, the head of the Alabama Historical Commission, promising way back when I first started looking for the Clotilda, she promised this room full of descendants in Africatown that the ship would stay here in Africatown. So, you know,
okay.
We got that. And I think we can hold her to that because it makes perfect sense. There's no reason to put it anywhere else. You know, the Smithsonian Museum, the African American History Museum in D.C. is great, but it doesn't have room for the ship.
You know, no, and I don't want it to go there.
Ship,
I don't want it. I want it to stay here.
Stay here.
Yeah, and so, I mean, it sounds like, and I've been, you know, with you 100% that it should be in Africatown since you and I first started talking about this. I don't know how it would be any other way. My only worry, and it's almost like, you know, it's a technical discussion. I'm listening to you on this, and your opinion's very important. I want to make sure that the excavation, if done, doesn't mess this up, right? I mean, if there was a chance of messing it up, I'd rather have a replica on shore and then have boats would go out to the site and you know, maybe show it on sonar or have a video or something like that. I just don't want to lose it, you know? That's my only worry.
We're not going to lose it. I
okay.
mean, there are ships on display all over the world
cool.
that are older than the Clotilda. There's a 1,000-year-old ship or 400-year-old ship in Stockholm, the Viking
mm-hmm.
ship is gorgeous. The Chinese just dug up an 800-year-old junk from the bottom of the ocean. Now, I say junk, that's the type of ship.
Ship,
not,
yeah.
Not what
yeah.
it was.
Right.
800 years old. They have it on display in a museum in a giant tank of water. And you can actually go in there and look and see all the cargo still in the hold. It was full of porcelain, you know, Chinese porcelain and stuff. This thing is 800 years old.
Okay.
So
I'm good as long as you. I'm good.
160 years old, and they cut that wood, and sap came out. It can come up. It's just a matter of money and determination. And you know, this is not. This is a moment where we, you know, figure out how to accomplish something. I mean, we've been to the freaking moon.
Yeah.
Digging up a ship out of the Mobile River that's in 18 feet of water is not that hard. Anybody who says it's impossible is lying, and you know, it's that simple.
If you're just joining us, talking to Ben Raines and the Last Slave Ship book out now. It's been out. We're talking about the physical Clotilda, what happens to it next. I do want to talk about this process because people ask this question. You're talking about we need to get it done. We need to. We've been to the moon. Where's the money come from on this? Is it a combination? Is it something the feds would come in full speed? Is it responsibility of the state of Alabama? What do you know about that?
All right. So I have suggested that Congress should come up with the money through an act, because this artifact doesn't belong to Mobile or any one group. This belongs to everybody. This is a piece of our shared history, and it's a history of the United States, and the history of all descendants of all enslaved people, because there's no other ship like it. This is the most intact slave ship ever found. So one of the ideas is to raise the money privately, because that's the model of the museum in Montgomery. It's private, which means the state, the city, nobody can tell them what to do. And it's part of why that museum is so effective and powerful. And so that's my model. I want to, form a group with the descendants and all these community groups in Africatown, and have a board, and I want to raise the money privately. I think to build the museum of the caliber I'm talking about and dig the ship up, because Alabama's too broke to do it. They just, we zero fund all our state agencies. We're broke always every year.
Except for now, by the way, second ARPA funding special session coming up later this summer. Pretty flush with money for right now.
City of Mobile has $110 million not earmarked for anything in surplus right now. So, what I was going to say is I think we need $40 to $50 million, and we can have a world-class tourist destination. Remember, I said that it was a $1 billion economic impact in Montgomery. So if we spend $40 or $50 million, however we get our hands on it, private, city funding, whatever, it will yield benefits for the whole community. When you look at civil rights tourism, it is a burgeoning industry. Charlotte has just built this museum, it's about to open and be gangbusters. There's this trail. People travel. My mother, when that museum opened in Montgomery, she flew down to go to it from Washington, D.C., where she lives. The people who will come to a museum like this are, of course, African-Americans whose ancestors were enslaved or arrived here in the hold of a boat, but also, people like my mother, who's an Alabama native, travels extensively and is fairly well off. That's the kind of, those are the groups we want to bring here. People who care and who will come and spend money to get to experience it. And so, having a small little museum in Africatown, people aren't going to be flying from all over the country or other countries or whatever to go to that tiny little building. They want to go to something that is, the scale this deserves. I interviewed this guy in Africatown, Lamar Howard, who runs a food truck and makes t-shirts about the ship and stuff like that. And he said to me, we were talking about digging the ship up and whether we do. And he said, digging the ship up, not digging it up, that's just stupid. He said, when I went to the Lorraine Motel where they killed Dr. King, and I saw the motel, I started crying. We've got that same history right here with the ship. When people see that ship in a big hall in a museum, they're going to cry. And he said, that saying, the truth will set you free. The truth is the ship. Every black person in America, their ancestors arrived here in the hold of a ship like that. And I just thought that was such a powerful summary of why dig it up and what it'll do and what it'll mean.
Coming right back to wrap it up with Ben Raines right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right to 155, FM Talk 106.5. Midday Mobile, coming right back to our conversation to wrap it up with Ben Raines. Heads up. Maybe this will be of interest to Ben Raines. My buddy Forrest and the gang at Blue Water Yacht Sales, and they're famous for their yacht sales, but let me talk about the service right now. Yamaha Customer Service Index at 100%, a 5-star Yamaha service. and MasterTech location. Only four MasterTechs in our area, one full-time at Blue Water Yacht Sales and Service. Here's what I love that Forrest and the gang do right now. It is not a, you bring your boat in, and they're great with the Yamahas, obviously, but they work on all makes and models, okay, and doing that service on the boat. And they got the special right now, get you ready for getting out on the water. It's not just your engines. So you bring it in there, and they're going to look at the engines, go through it, make sure everything's good to go. If you got a part that's going out, they're going to call you and say, hey, you want to replace this? But while they do it, they're also going to check your bilge pump, your nav lights, electronics, all the things that make the day on the water great. So when you back that boat in, you got the family, you got the sandwiches, you got the drinks, the whole nine, that it's not some domestic scene at Billy Goat Hole or Cotton Bayou. It's a great trip for the family. So do this. Set that service appointment up with my buddy. Give him a call, 476-2699, 476-2699. BlueWaterYachtSales.net is the website. And just say, hey, I want to schedule a service appointment, and they'll work with you, get everything done on the boat, and do what I do. Just drop it off, get it done, pick it up, and go have fun. Blue Water Yacht Sales. Just make sure you think about them for service. All right, it's Ben Raines, Last Slave Ship. That is the book that has him traveling all over the country, but we're talking about what's going on back here at home. So the process on this, you know, I'm always asking for timelines. When do we have a decision of what's going to happen, whether they're going to roll in with cofferdam, what they're going to do, and like, can I put something on my calendar?
No, and you really ought to be able to, and we really ought to have already dug up the ship. The slow pace that they're moving is really frustrating, and it's not like they're being careful or anything like that. They just haven't done the basic engineering work they should have done 4 years ago, 3 years ago, 2 years ago. You know, that's what they were doing here now. This was the first time they took sediment samples to see how firm the riverbed is under it. So we are a ways out from them accomplishing anything or making a decision. You know, they got good information during this trip. So that'll help the process along. But, I really think the state is sort of overwhelmed by the awesome, you know, responsibility and awesome archaeological item we have here. They've never dealt with anything like this. You know, the Historical Commission's job is to keep up some antebellum mansions and Fort Morgan and Fort Gaines. And from the very first start, when the first, you know, ship, first article I wrote about possibly finding Clotilda, their attitude was call me up and yell at me for looking for it.
You know? Wow.
So I think public pressure is going to be key. And I think, you know, us keeping up this drumbeat of, hey, we want the ship dug up. It's obvious. It's, you know, simple, stupid that that's what should happen. Anybody who doesn't see that needs to just get out of the way. I'll leave you with this thought. You know, people have been saying the museum's too hard. The ship is digging up's too hard. You know, finding the ship was pretty hard. I saw Montel Williams speak in 1988 when he was the top gun of the Navy. I don't know if you knew that. Montel was once the Navy's top gun, like Tom Cruise.
Yep.
Before the TV show guy and all. And he gave this awesome speech talking about coming from a hardscrabble background and how he managed to become the top pilot in the nation. And he said, whenever I came to an obstacle, I just said, mountain, get out of my way. And that's where we are. This is our mountain, get out of my way moment. And if the state is the mountain, the Historical Commission is the mountain, whatever, the ship is going to come up, and it's going to be on display in a museum in Mobile, and it is going to transform our whole community.
Love that spirit. Ben, as always, I appreciate our time together. We'll do it again soon.
Can't wait. Can't wait.
Hey, stay. Keep your keep your phones,
you know,
out of the water.
Boat repair stuff. Yeah, people, I'm in my boat every day. The stuff goes bad sitting in your shop, at your house, or your boat's in the garage. Mother Nature is working on it.
Well said.
It worked last time. Doesn't mean anything.
Wise words. Great. Thank you, Ben. We'll be right back tomorrow for Midday Mobile. Paul Feinbaum next.